animals less healthy than you can't nourish you.
Are you surviving or are you thriving?
Are you too busy to live?
Do you have grain brain?
That was brain.
Fight for your life. Get your prescription for health today.
Is Mother Nature too good to be
it's
true?
Not you, it's the food. It's a no-grainer.
Oh. That isn't happening to us.
It's already happening to you, woman. Join our army of Minas.
Keep the government off our farms.
Make it happen today.
It's time to drop some atomic mom bombs.
It's not me. It's you. Invest in your life.
Yay! Her name is Neethi.
Go save the bacon, mommy.
Shall we begin?
Hey friends, I am Neethi the Pharmacist, here with my co-hosts, Janae Williams and Valerie Cruz, and we are on full. Welcome to Our View.
Hi everyone.
Hey everybody.
Hey friends.
So today, I wanted to share my story. You know, a lot of people know me because they are familiar with the story about our daughter, Meenakshi. So for those of you who may not know, in 2007, our two-year-old daughter, Meenakshi, was diagnosed with esthesioneuroblastoma. What that means is this area here is called esthesio. Neuroblastoma means like new cells. And she had a solid mass tumor that had begun. It was growing inside of her head. It was threatening all of her, vital structures within her head. It wasn't actually in the brain. It was actually under the brain. And it had eaten up her entire sphenoid bone. The sphenoid bone, by the way, is the rock-like bone in the center of the head of a child. And it later grows and develops into what we know as a sinus cavity. And it's also the reason why children are pretty clumsy their head is so heavy. They're pretty clumsy until they're about 11, 12 years old when they fully develop and this bone opens up properly. So in her case, this solid mass tumor had eaten up this entire bone. So I don't know if you guys understand that means that she's now like, actually, her vital structure has been like damaged. So in 2007, she was presenting as if she had a sinus infection. We go to the doctor, we end up at the ER, and they do a CAT scan. She's 2 years old, and we end up doing emergency room to emergency room transfer from Wake Med to Duke Children's Hospital. And, it's like this insane whirlwind. And we find out that her entire head is full of tumor. What are you talking about? Like, who's ready for this? So my husband and I are in shock. I'm, by the way, pregnant with my third child. I just found out on Friday, and this is now Labor Day Monday, and we're doing emergency room to emergency room transfer. So you cannot even know how many hundred million things are going through my mind. And my husband knows that I'm pregnant. And by the way, nobody else does because we just found out. So our family doesn't know. There's a lot happening. And we just find out that our daughter has a solid mass tumor and it still hasn't registered with me that it's cancer, you know? So that story is very emotional. I've said it already. It's on my podcast, and I'm going to ask all of you to please listen to the first couple of episodes of my podcast and hear that story. I also shared it with Vaxxed, and so I have that video also on my website. And so today, a lot of people think that is where my story began. When I would say that was the assault that led to my awakening, which happened little bit later than that. But prior to that I have a lot of experiential, my experience, I would say, would have begun probably around the age of seven. And what I mean is that that was, you know, when I was younger, then no one went to, you know, a pediatrician or anything like that unless they had a problem. My mom wasn't just taking us. Well, nobody did, not just my mother, but like nobody was just going to the pediatrician on some regular basis. The way these days they have all these kids on a schedule, you know, from day one, we were not. I think they did that in an effort to make it appear as if the medical, you know, allopathic medical realm is, you know, being a little bit more proactive in, you know, doing some advanced medical something. But I think actually that it was better before. Our parents actually had a lot more responsibility, and they, I felt like, were able to make better decisions for our health. My mom wouldn't go to the doctor for just any reason. I mean, we didn't go there because you had a cold or something. I didn't need to, like, wake up in the morning. You know, like these days you wake up, your kid, you know, has something going on, a fever or whatever, and everybody's trying to rush to the pediatrician. Well, our parents didn't do that. And so in my case, when we went there, I'm not even sure why we went there. One time when I was around 7, I remember that my mom was talking to my doctor, and he was telling her that I was doing this. This is an allergy salute. That's what he called it. Because my nose was running a little bit. My mom was watching me do this all the time, and it was driving her nuts. So she took me to the doctor to find out what's going on. He goes, that's called the allergy salute. I mean, and so I feel it makes me want to do this all the time now. But anyway, so she was like, what is that? Like, that's not normal. And she keeps doing it, you know? So she goes there. But you know what's interesting is he tells her that, and he tells her, you know, she'll outgrow it. There was no allergy medicine. It wasn't like I was just now put on some medication or anything. So I must have outgrown it because I quit doing it. I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, maybe my body figured out a way to, you know, balance itself out, because our bodies are actually powerful and they have the ability to self-regulate when we get out of the way. So he, you know, talked to her about some things. I was 7. I don't know what that could have been. But anyway, then, you know, the next time I went to the doctor, it was because, I mean, I might have gone sometime before that, but I don't have any memory of it. You know, after that, the next time, I mean, and every time we went to the doctor, it was pretty, like, memorable occasion, because we didn't really go there that often. And we were really excited to go to the treasure chest at the doctor's office to get a treasure out of his treasure chest. So anyway, the next time I think that I went there for myself, my mom was talking to the doctor because I was actually losing pigment here on the back of my neck. You know, I was, you know, maybe I was 11. And I remember that, you know, my mom, you know, we used to hang out on the couch or whatever, watching a movie or I don't know, even if we just had friends over and we're all, like, gathered in the living room talking. So I remember that I was, you know, laying down, my head was in my mom's lap. She was playing with my hair, like, you know, people do. And she notices this loss of pigment right here at the bottom, the nape of my neck. And because my grandfather, her father, was a renowned homeopathic physician when he was alive in India, then she had seen in his practice a lot of vitiligo. She was familiar with this, and it triggered in her mind, and she was terrified about it. And she decided that she needed to take me to see some specialists. So at that time, it wasn't like everybody nowadays has a specialist for everything because they promote that. At that time, there, you know, it was not something very common. So we go to my doctor. He connects her with, you know, a dermatologist, which I don't know. It didn't seem like a very common thing. It seemed kind of complicated or whatever. Anyway, we go to see this person, and all they want to do is put some dye on it or something. Now, fortunately for me, my mom knew that that's crazy, and she wasn't going to just do that, like going to paint something or put some makeup on me or something. She knew that there's some reason the body is losing pigment. That's crazy. And she wanted to hurry up, because when she noticed it, it was, you know, like little, looked like a Sharpie marker size, like the fat marker, not the fine Sharpie, but maybe like a regular, what we picture to be Sharpie dots, that size. The time it took for her to speak to this person and research it a little bit further. Remember, we don't have a World Wide Web. There's no internet at that moment, okay? So for her to make phone calls, use the yellow pages. I don't know if you even know what that is. You know, she was really searching to try to figure out, you know, where she could find someone else who would know something. So she's working closely with my actual pediatrician to find some other doctor, which they nobody has a computer to be looking this up really quick, okay? So this requires a lot of phone calls. I remember months went by. And then what happened is that she noticed now that had grown from the Sharpie size to like the tip of her finger. So she's freaking out, okay? That this is growing. What is it? She already knows that it's not some kind of fungus or something, you know? So she's like, what in the world? And she also knew that vitiligo had a very specific white center with a pink outline. So she knew a lot of these things from her own experience, which these days no one, you know, recognizes that as, you know, qualification to identify something that she already knew was bigger. So, you know, my mom was pretty badass back then if she was able to know something and actually take action to try to do something about it. So, you know, she's fighting for my life in her mind because something's happening and it's not a small thing. And she knows that she's seen this accelerate and she's seen it at, you know, bigger, greater levels. She doesn't want any of that to happen because what happens with people with vitiligo at some moment, you start looking like you've been a victim of a fire because you have this patchy pigment thing happening all over your skin. And like actually someone who might be in the street, you know, who wouldn't know might believe that this person must have survived a fire or something like that. When actually it's vitiligo. I see people actually right now, by the way, walking around with patches like that. And it's vitiligo. It's an autoimmune condition that I only realized was an autoimmune condition in 2012.
Nathie, wow. That's huge that your mom would realize that. I mean, what if she had gone with that advice? And mm-hmm. then it was more just of a cosmetic coloring in of something that is really, in actuality, an autoimmune disorder.
I know. And in the 80s, nobody was using words like autoimmunity. Like, what is that? And so, you know, let's go on to what she does. So she finds out that there is a specialist. There are two specialists only in America, or at least they discover that they only know that there's two specialists in America who understand and know what vitiligo is and how to treat it. And at that time, one of them was in Atlanta and the other one was in LA. And we were living in Charlotte, North Carolina. So let me just tell you, my mom is so badass. She drives every week. I know I said it twice. Sorry. Is it? Am I not allowed to use? Okay, sorry. Family show.
You're good.
Okay. So, I mean, but she was. I don't really know what else to call that. So she, can you imagine this right now today? I don't know very many parents. I mean, I know parents will fight for their children's lives. I'm not discounting that. What I'm saying is that she believed and knew that this was so serious that she was willing to drive all the way to Atlanta. And this wasn't covered by insurance, you guys. Okay. So she could have just said, well, we'll just roll with it because, you know, it's not covered. No, that was never good enough for her. And I can't know how much money my mom spent doing this. I'm going to make this a really quick story. I will tell you that for several months, it might have been a year. I don't even remember because I was, you know, 12. I believe I was 12 when this started. Okay. So we drive to Atlanta. We see the specialist who, by the way, my mom, I know that it basically took her almost, I don't know, like 9 months. Maybe it was a year. It was some extended amount of time. When she discovered this person, she couldn't get an appointment for me. And I remember hearing her talk to my uncle who lived in Atlanta, who, you know, was helping us with this research. Because again, there's no World Wide Web, you know, there's nothing. So she needs someone who's there who can maybe go knock on a door or something and do something. So my uncle was involved. I'm not sure of all the details because, you know, I was a kid. But somehow she gets hold of this doctor. She gets a message to the doctor where she says, who is this guy? Is he God? that I can never get an appointment with him or have a conversation with him or whatever. And for somehow she was able, she had to fight. It wasn't easy. Okay. And it's not covered by insurance or anything. And she gets us an appointment. By that point, by the time we go there, now this, you know, what was about this size is, you know, spreading. It's spreading and she can see it. She's freaking out because now it's growing. So by the time I actually go to see this person, I mean, and just think about it, like she caught it when it was you know, Sharpie edge. And now it's like, you know, almost the size of my pinky. Okay. It was crazy. So we get there to see him. He does, you know, blood work and I can't know all the exam. I mean, like physical exam, of course, but then blood work and all this stuff. And he finds a couple spots she didn't know. Okay. So she's just like, oh my God, you know, but fortunately it was like still very, very beginning stages. But my mom caught that so early. And I will tell you that we went through treatment I was undergoing treatment for that till I was 18. Wow. And that was, or maybe I was 17, 18. I don't know. It was like an insane amount of time. I know that I started driving. And so imagine this. We went to Atlanta from Charlotte every week for the first, I want to say it was about a year. It might have been 9 months. Again, I don't have a really good recollection of this. Long time. And then my mom, she's no dummy, okay? She started talking to dermatologists in Charlotte and promoting this other specialist, saying, don't you want the opportunity to work under this man so you can learn something?
That's awesome.
She's like selling this physician education, you know, to somebody and giving them the opportunity to learn something from this specialist so that she doesn't have to keep driving back and forth.
Right.
So she finally, I mean, my mom's so smart. So she gets this somebody, doctor in Charlotte, to agree and invest in the equipment that's required because this person had to invest in equipment because I was undergoing what was called like UVA, UVB treatment. So it's a light box. Basically, it's like this glorified sun tanning booth vertical. Okay. And so this physician has to invest in this, make room for it in his practice. I mean, she had to be selling it hard. You know, I don't think this person had this equipment. I mean, I don't know. Maybe this guy had it, but I really don't believe so. It seemed like to me, you know, and I'm just eavesdropping on a bunch of adult conversations. I feel like she sold this thing so this man invested in it and wanted to work under this doctor in Atlanta.
He probably owes her money because I know in treating eczema, they do that light treatment as
well.
Do
they do that now?
They do.
Okay.
And I did that with Sarah.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this box, obviously we know how big autoimmunity is now. So, I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, he had a million uses for it that I wouldn't have even known about. But anyway, he has this opportunity. He's working. So now we get to where I'm able to go to these weekly sessions because I had to go weekly. Okay. So she got it to where I'm now going weekly. We had weaned off of the Atlanta trips, but it was never over. I think the most it was monthly. Like we still had to go monthly for blood work and whatever. Or maybe I think she might have at some point got it to where we went every other month. I don't know. I mean, she was working really hard on it. But come on, Lord. This was like 5 years, 4 or 5 years of treatments, and it's out of pocket. Insurance isn't covering this, okay? But she knew she had to, like, be fighting for my life. Meanwhile, no one is paying attention to what kind of side effect it's having on me emotionally, socially, how it's affecting me, like the medication that they're putting me on, to be able to be prepared, to be able to sit in this thing. And, you know, which I happen to know now that you can, you know, heal and repair a lot of these things, you know, just using nutrition. And at that time, no one knew all this, okay? And so I probably, you know, wouldn't be too far off by saying that my mom probably paid for 2 college degrees for me just to be able to have this treatment, okay? And then during that time, you know, I went from being a straight A, gifted and talented student to being an average C student. Well, she doesn't know what's going on. As far as my mom goes, she's doing everything. The doctor has never told her that these medications and this treatment is going to give me the side, like give me these side effects that, you know, I'm nauseated. I'm like, you know, brain fogged out. I'm fatigued. Like I'm sleeping all the time. My mom literally thought I was this crazy junior, because now I'm in junior high, high school. She thought I'm on drugs. Wow. So my mom and I are fighting. I don't even know what I'm fighting with her about, because I don't know what she's so mad about.
But you were on drugs.
I was on drugs. I was on prescription medication. Right. And she's thinking like, you know, I'm this rebellious kid because I have no words. I have no ability to articulate like what's happening. I don't know what the heck's going on with me. I just know that I want to sleep. Everything's is too hard, you know. And for her, she's just like, you've always been my sickly kid. Okay, well, that's awesome. Thanks. You know, I mean, you can't understand how this is affecting my confidence, how I feel like I'm just doing a bad job, you know, and my grades are crashing. I don't know why. And I'm trying as hard as I can, but I'm like, and you know, this is never revealed to her until after I graduate from high school.
Wow. Yeah.
I can't tell you. I remember my mother's face. She was livid. My mom was livid when she found out that this was a side effect of the medication and not, you know, and she also probably was kicking herself going, how did I not know that, you know? Yeah. But, I mean, like you had been sharing in your story, or all of us have had this experience where we're all like, you know, why did we not know any better? I'm sure she must have at some point, you know, I do remember her face when he was telling her what the side effect. He said, I didn't want you to know the side effects because I felt like you would never allow her to go through that therapy.
So he gave the side effects years later.
Years later.
Wow.
He didn't want her not to put me through the treatment because he felt like she would find out what the side effects are going to be and that she wouldn't allow the treatment to happen.
That's not fair.
Which is not fair. As a mother, I would be, I mean, and she was. I watched her face like she was up in arms because she could have been investing in a tutor. She could have been more patient with me. She could have had more grace. I mean, you know, it ruined our relationship in a lot of ways because there was this, you know, constant tension. And then I was a rebel. Now you made me into a rebel, so I'm a rebel, you know. And, you know, because that's what happens with kids, you know. Oh, we yes. all have. So if you're doing this and being combative with your 12, 13, 14, I mean, what in the world? I mean, it was years of this, okay? Mm-hmm. And so it's shaping me and affecting me. You know, and now as an adult, I can reflect back onto that time and go, OMG. And so it gives me a different perspective, a different compassion. If I'm working with someone right now, you know, who is going through that, then I already know like 15 ways it's going to affect them, you know, that they're going to have to deal with things in an effort to gain their health back. And it's no small thing, you know, it's no small thing. It's hard for an adult to, you know, have a mind strong enough to overcome a diagnosis. And this is the reason why I so many times in working with people, you know, have said to them, I'm so sorry that your physician was so completely and totally irresponsible that they just threw a diagnosis at you.
Yeah.
Because it's irresponsible. The minute they did that, they just took away all of your positive thinking. Your mind is, you know, blown. Literally, your mind is blown. And so you can't overcome any illness, any diagnosis. You can't overcome these cancers and whatever. If someone tells you, you know, by the way, you have breast cancer, you have this much time and you better do what I say right now. Of course, you're going to just do what they say. Your mind is blown.
Yeah.
You have no power. They just took your power away. And I say that's a violation.
Yeah.
That is a violation. It's an assault in such a powerful way. And when are we going to, as a society, demand these physicians stop it?
You know, what you're saying, it's so true. It's always in the back of your mind. And what people have to understand is that if you are stepping outside of nature just for a little while to go on some pharmaceutical, the pharmaceutical is never what your body is asking for. It may be a decision that you're making at the time because you know that this is something that has been proven to work on this particular thing. But just know that there are several other things that are thrown off balance. And one of the things, and you know, like what you were saying, you can't be your full self. You just can't. Like, I was thinking about my daughter when she was diagnosed with intermittent asthma. I tried, it was 6 months old to 3 years old. I was the one that got her off of the medicine because I knew inherently, and I don't know where it came from, but from inside in my gut.
Your gut.
I knew I don't want my baby to be this baby. I want her to be who she's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But she was on a few different, even if it was low dose, a low dose steroid, and then a couple of others that I long put out of my mind. But my goal was get her off because I want to know what she feels like. I want her to know what she really feels like, or what she's really like. It's going to impact you,
right? You and have to have a baseline.
The side effects that the physicians know, they're going to tell you. What about the ones they don't know?
Right.
What about the ones that your body is trying to tell you about, but you don't have the words as you as you demonstrated? What about those symptoms or side effects? Those are the ones that are most dangerous.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as parents, you know, working with our children today, you know, I know that my children don't have a vocabulary to tell me what it is that they're feeling. And because of my experience, you know, because of all of these things that I went through, then I make it a very strong point to when my one of my kids is saying anything to me, like if they're saying to me, you know, mom, you know, like right now my daughter is, you know, battling the flu or whatever. So she's like, well, my throat hurts. Okay, how does it hurt? Is it a wet hurt? Is it a dry hurt? Can you swallow? Does it hurt all the time? You know, does it feel like someone took something and scraped it? Does, you know, I'm trying to give her as many words as possible to try to understand exactly, is this like something that's dry? Is it wet? I mean, how can I help you if you, you know, if I don't understand exactly? I can't just, sore throat doesn't mean anything to me. Like, I need a lot more words. And so now it's interesting that after years, you know, my children are using like way a lot more vocabulary to try to explain to me how they feel. But they're also having to pay attention because, you know, you ask the question, but then they have to think like, my throat hurts all the time, not just when I swallow. Oh, it only hurts when I swallow. Oh, it hurts if I talk. It doesn't hurt when I talk. You know, whatever. And so
that's an amazing point, Ethan, because
yeah.
Until you just said that right now, I'm trying to think, do I give my daughter those words? I don't think I do.
Well,
and not only that, when you go to a doctor, the doctor doesn't ask for that many words, not in my experience.
No, because they have a script.
How are they going to know? Like, how are they going to know how to treat me and my body if I'm not giving them all those words?
Yeah.
And they're not asking. And, and you know, how irresponsible. How can they treat you holistic? Well, they're not holistically treating you. Let's just, you know, as a parent who's wondering if this is a good idea, if this is not a good idea, I have a lot of folks who say to me, yeah, I don't know if I believe in that, you know, natural stuff or whatever. Well, okay, I'm not trying to convince you, and I didn't need to be convinced. I already know what my experience was, okay? So back to what I was saying about this experience is I go through years of this. It's basically taken away all of the joy that I would have possibly experienced junior high, high school. Imagine, you know, like it's already hard enough to socially navigate your way through life during those years, right? And so I have no social, no positive, I would say, you know, social experiences. Well, I do have some, but I mean, it was, for me, it was always a battle between me and my mom. And I think that is the most upsetting thing for me. It was, you know, you don't want your relationship with your parent or for the parent to have that relationship with their child, you know. And I think the majority of the turbulence between she and I all was right then, because she was thinking I'm just being some crazy drug addict kid or something because, you know, Pretty in Pink was out and whatever. I'm just saying, like, you know, movies were depicting this teenage thing. And what does my mom have to go by? You know, because we all know that unless we're talking with our friends and stuff, then we don't know what we're supposed to be doing with our teenage kids. You know, are your teenage kids doing this? Oh, really? Well, yeah. So she just thought I was just being super overly rebellious or something. When she discovered that the medication was doing this, I mean, now what? She can't go back 5 years. That's you right. know, that's not fair.
Right.
So anyway, that shaped me a million different ways. I don't know. I can't even get into my entire bibliography of how I know what I know. So fast forward, right? Fast forward to, okay, now I'm trying to go to college. Well, my grades aren't making it, right? Obviously, which is really bad for me because I'm the perfectionist rule follower that nobody believes is a rule follower because everybody thinks I'm like the rebel because I was on drugs for all these years that I couldn't even articulate like what's happening. So, you know, the adults in my life are not getting like an honest picture of that. I think my mom started trying to see me in a different way, but she and I already have this broken chemistry between us, right? So it was really, really a challenge. Anyway, I end up going to college. I decided, fine, I'm a good singer. I'll just do that, which is funny because I was also really good at math and I was really good at debate and I was really good at some other things that I could have done. My mom, meanwhile, knows this, right? So she's trying to steer me towards law school or something. No, you'll be better at debate. You know, or something. And I'm like, you're so just focused on money and you're so mean and I just want to go sing songs. Like, why can't I just go to North Carolina School of the Arts or something? Anyway, longer story about that is that I end up going to pursue my music. I move away to Atlanta and I'm always like health conscious because I've been through all this drama, right? I'm always like really conscious about food and what I'm eating because, you know, one thing great about my physician that I was seeing in the specialist that I was going to see in Atlanta is that that was the same time everything was going fat free. It was the same time that all of a sudden the milk just went purple and pink and blue and whatever. And it used to just be milk.
Wow.
You know, I remember it so distinctly because I remember him specifically having an entire conversation with us saying, do not change the milk. He talked about all kinds of things. I don't remember them all. I was a kid, okay? I remember this milk conversation because he said for them to take the fat out of the milk, they have to put sugar in. And he said anything that they decide to take fat out of, they're going to put sugar in it. So do not do it. And that was also when they were doing like fat-free ranch dressing, you know, whatever, all of that stuff. And I just remember it because we walked into the grocery store one day and my mom, you know, because I was the 14-year-old had to run in and go grab the milk for her real quick while she, my single mom, is like waiting in the car because she didn't want to put her clothes on. And she's just like, hurry up and just go get us a gallon of milk, right? So I run in and I come out and I said, I don't know what to buy. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, it's not just milk. It's like all these milks. And she's like, what are you saying? And she's yelling. She's mad at me. And I said, I don't know what to buy because there isn't any just milk. I don't know what's going on. And so she has to come in now and she's not happy about it. And we find the dairy keeper guy and she goes, what is all this? Because, you know, it's blue and it's pink and it's whatever. And he goes, oh, you know, it's really great. Now you can get 2%. And she goes, what are you talking about? Where is the milk? And he just goes, you want the red one? And so, you know, I will never forget that because it was just like crazy. Wow. Who would do that? Why are they doing this? This is so... So anyway, we go back and we have, you know, of course, we're going to Atlanta every week and I go to the doctor and I'm like, did you know that there's blue milk and purple milk? And, you know, we were just talking about how stupid it is. And he says, you know, oh, yeah. And by the way, don't ever do that because you need fat and you don't need sugar. And just I don't know what these people are doing and I can't know right now, but just you don't do it.
That's so awesome that really he would say that right. against the grain.
I was well, you know, it wasn't even in the education yet. It was just something that was happening in the store. And so he said, I don't know what's going on. Like these marketing people, you know, he started naming brands and saying, you know, they're just trying to sell more products or something. And he goes, I don't know what it's about. Like just, you know, back then people were way more practical because we didn't have a World Wide Web and people were very straightforward with their conversation. There wasn't a lot of second guessing and there wasn't a lot of this branding. So, you know, it was a completely different time. And so anyway, I knew this as a young adult, you know, I had always known this now. And And so I knew, you know, I needed to have a really, I always had vegetables too, by the way. I was very fortunate because, you know, we're Indian. Indian people are mostly vegetarian. So, you know, I know how to make a lot of vegetables, and I just didn't know that you wouldn't have vegetables. And it was never in our vocabulary that, ew, they're vegetables. It wasn't, that was never, it was always, no, thank you. If you don't like something, then you never, ever, ever, never, ever say the words ew to food, because that is medicine. It is nourishing somebody. And I was always taught that you never, ever take power away from any nutrition because somebody needs it. That's and just right. Because you don't like it doesn't mean anything. And you never, I mean, I would, you know, get hit really hard immediately for saying any of those bad words or bad, bad words. So I didn't understand, you know, when I'm watching people say to me, you know, oh, I don't like that. It was actually just rude. It was not a done thing. Like people, I don't know. I never grew up with folks that were ever allowed to talk that way. So, you know, for me, maybe it was a generational thing. I'm really not sure what was happening. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting distracted off of the story. So I'm trying not to make this a very emotional lesson. You know, I'm going through my 20s. And I'm navigating my way through cooking and doing all this, which was, by the way, a passion for me. So it wasn't any big deal. I brought up the university experience because, you know, I ended up majoring in psychology because I was an industrial psych major because it was the only way to get my mom off my back because I wanted music. She wanted law. And I said, psychology. And she was just like, oh, yay, like that sounds medical, you know, and she was happy with that. And for me, I was like, yay, I'll learn how to make like write really good songs. I mean, and honestly, that was my 17-year-old self going, yay, I'm going to know how to write songs like, you know, like the bomb. And I'm going to be an awesome musician and be on Oprah one day, you know, only to find out it's a man's world and the music industry and all that awesome. And I ended up somehow now in real estate. So I'm going across the country. I'm working across the nation. I'm traveling everywhere. I'm staying fit, and I'm conscious of my food, right? And
what year is this that you're doing this?
So this is my 20s, and, you know, I'm still, so wait a minute. Okay, I went to college. I was an industrial psych major. I was almost done. And I got in trouble with my mom because I was singing and doing music. And also because she was like, your grades are not that awesome. Look, my grades were still really not that awesome because I was struggling with brain fog. I'm still in college eating crap food that they make us eat on the meal plan. And I'm not getting any better because it used to be that I was home. Right. And I was on high with a lot of my mom's vegetables.
Yeah.
Now I'm in college.
College is a desert.
College is a food desert. Yeah. So one thing was that my mother had negotiated with them for me to be able to cook because she said she, you know, really needs to be able to cook her food. And I was really, really fortunate that they would allow me to use my meal card to go to the kitchen and buy raw chicken breast, or the lady would run my card like I got a meal and she'd give me the components, wow, you know, to do it. And, but, you know, I was a busy college kid, mm-hmm, and it was also sometimes just easier to go, you know, to eat a burger at the Stew or whatever instead. I mean, didn't we all have a Stew, like the student, whatever? Mm-hmm. And so I would go to the Stew and play pool because that was more fun. You know, if I'm taking a break between studying, then I'd rather go to the Stew, be like the other kids, have a burger and play some pool and then go back to work, you know, to my, mm-hmm, to my studies or whatever. But I wasn't really probably doing the best. I mean, I was learning a lot for myself because I actually learn more hands-on. And so I was participating with my psych professors in other activities, but none of them counted towards my grade.
Wow.
Because I was just not thinking about that because I was an artist. And, you know, because artists don't think like that. So I wasn't very strategic. That was probably not a very good idea. Anyway, so, you know, she was obviously upset because she felt like, great, here you are again, rebel crazy kid, not finishing what you're supposed to be doing, not making good grades. I'm not paying for your school anymore. Okay, the bad news is that I'm under contract with the university, and you've been claiming me on your taxes for 2 years, and I can't get a student loan until I've been working for 2 years, and my, you know, my contract with the school is going to expire before all that happens. But so, okay, I didn't finish school for all of these financial reasons. And, but I did get all this other education, right?
Right.
On top of which, then I go pursue my music. So then I'm like, okay, whatever, I'm a loser. I'm just going to go be a singer and I'm going to show her that I'm like awesome. And I find out about the Man's World thing. I end up in real estate and I end up with this fantastic company that takes me under their wing. And that was a time when corporations or companies were investing a lot of education in the people. Mm-hmm. So they hired me and they gave me this incredible training. And now I'm like the super marketing specialist. I'm a professional closer. And they send me out to these sites where we worked with management companies and owners of properties that were in the red. And we had 45 days to put them in the black. It's very aggressive work. Okay. Yeah. And so I had the good fortune of working in over 36 markets in this country. And I was able to see exactly what people were like in 36 markets. You know, I mean, the number one thing in sales that people say to you is like, oh, well, people around here are different. No, you're not actually different because the human psyche is just, you know, the same everywhere. And so, you know, this is my background, right? And then I am living on suitcases and somehow I end up, you know, back home. I'm working at home. My mom's like, if you're going to work this hard for other people, why don't you come work with me? And she's in real estate. Mm-hmm. So I come home. Of course, she and I are like, you know, yin and yin. So that wasn't working out too good. I ended up, you know, working with some friends of hers. I ended up going into the closing side of things. I was working with some attorneys and stuff, which again is just developing me with legal language, which is really awesome. I was becoming I became a lot stronger with contractual law. And so this is the background, right? And then I meet my husband. Then we want to have babies. Then we get pregnant and I fall into this world where now I'm supposed to interview pediatricians, right? Now I'm supposed to do all the best things because I'm going to do all the most wonderful things. My kid's going to be the super greatest, wonderful, healthiest, whatever, because, you know, we're going to do a really good job. And I go and I research my pediatrician. I'm pregnant and, you know, we're doing all this good stuff. Well, guess what? I'm 31 weeks pregnant, my first pregnancy, and I start having contractions. It's Christmas. We're all freaking out because the baby's not due till Valentine's Day. Literally, February 14th was the due date. It's Christmas. I am, you know, having contractions. OMG. Like, you know, that's not supposed to be happening. And
were there issues before the contractions?
No, not really. No. Wow. I mean, you know, I don't know because it was my first pregnancy. So if I was having any kind of really like real issues, I did not know because, you know, I was pregnant for the first time. Mm-hmm. My body was taken over by this alien and I was just doing what the alien said, you know, eat
right,
like crazy. You know, I was just like with my first pregnancy, I was a Mediterranean, like strict, like it was crazy. I could smell greens in your fridge and they would make me nauseous.
Wow.
And I couldn't eat them. I had an aversion to it, which was ridiculous because I loved salads. I loved greens. I can't eat anything like that with this kid. I can only have burgers. A lot of them. Like a lot of burgers. I don't know. I can't tell you how many crazy burgers. And it wasn't the good ones. And I never ate that before. Like, I don't mean that I didn't eat burgers, but I never would ever go and eat a fast food burger. Right. Never. I would never do that. But now, television.
Wow.
I see a commercial.
Yeah.
I'm possessed by the alien. Alien takes over. It was scary. I mean, really, when I think about it now, I was like such a terrible pregnant mom. Like, horrible. I apologize to my child every day.
It's all the subliminal messages.
It's awful. So then that's first pregnancy. Second pregnancy happens. Okay, wait. First pregnancy, premature labor, right? I'm having the placenta is separating from the wall. I'm having contractions and I'm freaking out. So I'm on bed rest for 5 weeks with contractions. I don't want to be on bed rest. I need to move because I took Lamaze and I feel like I have to move and I'm not allowed to move. It's horrible. And I'm not allowed to do all this stuff, all this, you know, allopathic rules. Not good. It's bad, 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 bad. Anyway, he ends up coming. He's born at 36 weeks. We're like, oh my God, please breathe. I have an entire team of people in the hospital. So we can't have any kind of natural birth. Let's just be clear. Okay. Right. No natural birth because everybody's freaking out. And the doctor is even breaking my water because now he wants to induce the baby.
Wow.
Because he doesn't believe that there's enough nutrition in the placenta. And I don't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
So I'm just doing what he says. So I'm like just following instructions mm-hmm. because I'm going to do a really good job and I'm going to be like awesome yeah. and I'm going to do the best job. So now I am freaking out in the hospital. Because I wrote a birth plan. Probably you guys did too.
Absolutely.
And my birth plan was natural.
Mine was too.
It was all natural. We were no interference allowed. And, you know, my husband was going to be with me and the music and the, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Water.
And all these things were going to be happening. And now none of it's happening.
Yeah, Pitocin happens.
So Pitocin is happening. They're not allowing me to walk. I want to be on a yoga ball. I want to stand up. I want to be vertical. Not allowed. I'm like, this is crazy. I don't even know how to do this. And so anyway, the baby comes. Praise the Lord. He can breathe. His lungs are developed fully. I see the, you know, emergency, whatever, leave my room. That's all I wanted was for them to go away. And he's born. He's only 4 pounds, 7 ounces. You won't even believe that today because he's like a giant. And you know, I mean, but these are my experiences, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then somehow I recover from this. And that was like crazy, creepy, scary. And fighting the doctors. I don't want them giving him shots, you know, and all of these other things. You can't even know. Like, I didn't want him to have any shots. Because they wanted to give the baby a shot on the first day of being born. I don't know anything at that point. I don't know anything that I'm supposed to do. But I know that I was 6 years old when I got a vaccination. I'm still confused about this thing when it, you know, at the time of having the kids, I don't know anything. I'm like confused about why they want to give everybody so many shots and why they want to do it when they're babies. Cause when I was coming up, nobody ever would get a shot before you're 6 or 7 years old. So I'm like asking the doctors, they're like kind of mad at me or quiet, you know, like nothing. I mean, and again, I have no experience with the World Wide Web. At this point, we have a World Wide Web, but I am not going to think about it because right. Google didn't exist. Okay, now we might have had a World Wide Web. If Google existed at that time, I did not know about it. Okay, mm-hmm. So this is 2004. I don't know when Google came out, so who knows? All right, anyway, so I'm not able to get the answers that I want. I don't have a habit of knowing how to research anyway, except for just reading books or something. And there's no book written about this, okay? Mm-hmm. Not in 2004. Right. And if it was, I was never going to find it. Then there was 2000. Okay, so my first two were only 16 months apart. So nature has grace. Somehow it allowed me to have another baby right away, even though my first pregnancy was so complicated or whatever. I have the second baby. The second time, only vegetables, by the way. You know, every pregnancy is different. That one, no meat.
Body was compensating.
Yeah. It was really, really bizarro. And and she arrives like, boom, fast. They still gave me an epidural. I'm still mad about it. Wow. I felt like they've assaulted me and just gave it to me. Supposedly, they're saying that I asked for it. I don't believe that because if you know me, then you know I did not.
Right.
And my husband would argue that I did not also, you know, and he doesn't always take my side on these things. But anyway, think about it. My spine has been violated twice. Now you know, let's fast forward a little bit more. When I just had told you guys at the beginning that when Meenakshi was diagnosed at 2, think about this. I have a 3-year-old at home because they're just 16 months apart. Okay. And I have a baby that I'm carrying. All right. And now the baby, this pregnancy is a high risk pregnancy because of age, because we're at Duke Children's with my daughter. I don't know. Do you think that I have any experience that would help benefit any of you right now? Just based on what I'm going through. But let me build this up a little bit more. Now I'm sitting at Duke for basically 6 months, and all I'm doing is learning about how to be a hematology oncologist because I got to fight for my child's life, right? And do you remember what my mom did for me?
That's right.
So what do you think I'm doing? Mm-hmm. All right. Tenfold, right? And I'm pregnant. And I'm still not on the World Wide Web. I mean, I'm not Google. I don't know Dr. Google for this, all right? So when people ask me, you know, what is my, you know, and people do ask me, they're like, well, how do you know this and how do you know that? Well, I don't have a bibliography that I've written, and I'm not planning to anytime soon. And I don't know, because I sat there as a pregnant person while my child is sitting in her bed, you know, dying, and I'm just reading everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And I don't know. I read a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now I am fighting for my kid's life.
So right. What you read, what did you do when you read it? You actually applied it. You used it.
I was reading all of these big things, big, big things. And what did I learn? I'm like you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Remember we were one time talking about on one of the previous episodes, we're talking about how you want to trace back the meatball?
Yes.
Yeah.
Girls, I was like, okay. This means this, this means this, this means this. That means I don't need to do any of this. Okay. No. Now I became a professional
tracer.
This is BS.
Right.
This is BS. Mm-hmm. I mean, I eliminated so much crap. It was like insane. What did I learn? If cavemen didn't eat it, we don't need it.
Right.
That's what I learned. And I did not know what paleo was at this time. We had no paleo diet. Thing. Right. None of this is happening yet. My motto in the house was, if cavemen didn't eat it, we don't need it.
Right.
And that was, I just made it up. And, you know, how did I make it up? I don't know. I read like for freaking ever. I mean, I think all I did, because I'm pregnant and I can't go anywhere. And my 3-year-old is living at my sister's house. And I'm just trying to figure out how to get my daughter out of this room, you know, and we're like being held hostage because I don't know anything. So if I want to get her out, I got to know something. And now these doctors hate me. I have tape recordings of the physicians hating me because I am questioning them on everything. Mm-hmm. What is this for? What is this for? What is this for? Why do you need this? You know, oh, well, you better explain it to me. I can tell you something. I became a very professional hematology oncologist very quickly.
Right.
And you know what I learned? I learned that everything is about cellular health. Everything. All of the diagnosis, I don't care what it is. Everything's about cellular health. You want to know what else I learned? I learned that I need to go to the farmer. So what did we do? We took her out of the hospital. I told my family, well, you know, if you listen to our story, that this didn't just happen lightly. It didn't happen in 1 second. There's a lot to it. Okay. We took her out of the hospital and then I started working with farms. That's all I was doing because, you know, if cavemen didn't need it, we don't need it. And I have a 3-year-old, and I have a 2-year-old fighting cancer, and I have a brand new baby. So I'm not farming. Sorry. I'm not going to try to, you know, homestead now. And I don't know how to do any of this stuff, and I'm not going to try to figure it out. You know, I'm educated. I'm finding somebody who is proficient in this, and then I'm going to hire them and make them work for me in every way possible because that's what my mama did. That's remember that? Do you remember how she, like, developed this dermatologist and made him into something greater than he was before because she wasn't going to be able to drive to Atlanta all the time.
Yeah.
So that's what I did, you know, and actually that is how the CSA evolved. It evolved out of necessity to feed my family. And I told everybody who joined in the CSA in the beginning, I said, this is a side effect of me needing to feed my family. If you want to take the benefit of the extras that we can't eat, then great. And if you can't, whatever. Bye. I'm never trying to sell anybody anything, and I still am not. And people, you know, since, and as a necessity, of, you know, I had to develop business for these farmers or else they were going to quit. Why? Because consumers are ignorant, have no idea what's going on. I didn't know. Why wouldn't I just go to the grocery store? I'm not stupid. Like, why do I need to create this painful task of seeking out food unnecessarily? Well, obviously it was working. Okay. If you listen to my story, then you know that we changed our entire lifestyle dramatically, not easily, and not because I just read some one thing or because I just had someone tell me. Nobody was around to tell me anything. Right. Even Dr. Barnes, who's our chiropractor, or any of these people that are in the community, nobody was around to tell me anything, okay? Mm-hmm. And I had to figure it out. It required a lot of research, and I can't give you my bibliography. And I don't, you know what? I started to go to nutrition school so that I could really coach people with some credentials so that people in today's society could understand what it is that I'm trying to do to help them. And guess what? Do you want to know what I found out?
What did you find out?
If I go to like Duke Integrative Medical School to do some type of nutrition education or something, it's going to be a psych class. It's not going to be a nutrition class. They're trying to teach you how to psychologically help other people change their view, change their habits. Well, I'm already a psych major.
Wow.
I don't need to go there to do that. Wow. Okay? I already created that in the CSA.
I think that's the amazing point. You went through a tragedy that you turned it around, not only for your family, but you turned that tragedy around for the community. You took a tragedy and helped your family eat better, survive cancer, be all around regenerative. And then you also gave that same blessing to the community. Mm-hmm. That is what I like to think we're doing in this show.
Well, you know, I firmly believe that if you are doing the right thing, if you are following the correct path, if you are working to serve others, I mean, whether it's your children or your husband or, you know, or whatever, I mean, you have to start service at home. You can't start service outside of your home. You have to start service at home. So if you are serving your home, you know, and then it's overflowing into the community, which is what it should be doing. If it's not happening in that way, then it's just not authentic, for one thing. And it's not true and it's not real. And I think if everybody looks around today at what is happening in the world, then you know that what we're living in is a facade. It isn't real. I mean, that is the point of this whole regenerative movement, is to reignite the truth that we all have in ourselves. I mean, I required, you know, this traumatic experience of having been in the hospital. I mean, that gave me a gift too, right?
Yeah.
Because A, it gave me, like, I believe that Meenakshi gave me this mission. You know, I mean, everything I'm doing is mission work. But I had time to sit there and read a plethora. I was reading medical book after medical book. I was reading medical journals. I was reading, you know, nutrition journals. I was studying food. I was studying farming. I was studying, you don't even know, like, for me to run the CSA too, I have to be an expert on ducks and hogs and everything. Because if I'm not, I can't go out and find for the membership. I can't find the highest quality meat.
But
I can't.
The awesome part is that you did all this work, all this footwork for not only the community, not only for your CSA, but of course for the farmers. Like I've heard you say before, and I think it's so honorable that they have been even changing their feed. Like they would know about someone that worked with you that was using GMO, you know, in their feed, and they wanted to change it to be better. Like you've changed even them so that now there is such thing as the highest quality food. The highest quality, like we didn't have that before. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think, for me, I'm glad that we're sitting here doing this, because there is a movement to uproot those things that have been done. The most important thing is that these farmers stay, because they're mm-hmm. at the top of the chain for all of us that want to heal. Mm-hmm. Food is medicine. People need to understand that. Where do you run to get medicine? to the highest height. You've established that. That mm-hmm. needs to stay.
Well, the other thing that people aren't unaware of is that, you know, there's with all like all of whatever's happening, there's a ripple effect. So, you know, if I'm developing farmers, then I'm creating competition for other farmers. Now the other farmers want to know, you know, why is she only working with this guy? Why is she only working with this guy? What's going on? Mainly because I have a lot of eaters that get upset and say that I'm trying to run some kind of monopoly by saying that every farmer isn't clean unless they're working with me. And I wasn't really, I mean, that wasn't what I was trying to say. I was saying that if you don't know what your farmer's doing, and if the truth is that most of them aren't doing it. They can't afford to do it. They can't afford to do it because it costs more than what you're willing to pay. And as a consumer, you don't even know why. You don't know what you're supposed to do. And they are not going to, you know, basically humiliate themselves to show and prove to you that what they're doing is better. Because, I mean, be honest with yourself. If you had to every day prove to somebody that what you were doing was the best thing, that's humiliating.
Honestly, right.
You know, and so, I'm not asking my farmers to humiliate themselves. I am promoting them and sharing with the community what they're doing. And I'm also working to help, you know, coach any other farmer who wants to do it well as well. You know, right. The truth is financially, a lot of them can't afford to go all the way clean if they don't have a consumer base willing to pay for the food.
And that's what we're trying to grow.
We're trying
to grow regenerative consumer to go out and seek the farms so that the farms will change.
Well, they're ready to rise to the occasion, okay? Let's be clear. You know, good business means that you are going to rise to meet the demand. And they're just good. You know, everybody acts like farmers are bad business people. I mean, maybe, I don't know, like, you know, efficiency-wise or some other thing-wise, maybe. But we're helping them to, you know, think of things in those ways because they haven't had to do that for a long time or probably ever, okay, because all of our food was centralized for so long. And so they haven't had the need to try to really do that. And so, you know, it's not that they're stupid. They just haven't had the need to do it.
Right.
And now they have to think of things in that way. And so we're working with them, anyone who's interested. So if you're watching this and you farm and you want some support or you want an education. I mean, that is, I have a 501c3 that I eventually had to create. And I had to do that because we're battling against a centralized education system, you know, and centralized food. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying as a consumer, if you're listening and watching these shows and you're realizing what's going on, then, you know, I'm hoping that you're going to want to learn how to be a regenerative consumer. And what that will result, you know, in, and that there's hope and you have the power to make it change. I mean, I made all this change so far by myself with nobody even wanting to help me. And now, you know, now I got you two working with me, sitting over here doing a show, you know. But back to my story real quick, I do want to kind of wrap that up. I mean, I don't know what's the wrap up?
Yeah, I think you did the wrap up.
I think the wrap up is...
The full circle,
yeah.
The full circle of going through your tragedy, saving your family as much as you could with what you had, spilling over to the community, and then over to the farmers, and now giving information to our regenerative consumers that we're trying to reach.
Yeah, I mean, everyone needs to be doing this on a global scale. It's not supposed to just be right here.
Right.
You know, and anyone who wants to know more, then please just tune in every week because we intend to release episodes every week. And, you know, why don't you take action and participate with us, you know, at Neethi the Pharmacist on Facebook, Neethi the Pharmacist on, I think on Twitter, I'm at Farm to Fork Meat. And, you know, Neethi the Pharmacist on Instagram. And tell us, you know, like what you're interested in hearing about. Tell us, you know, what kind of topics that you'd like for us to cover. And we're going to continue to bring, you know, other you know, people on to share professional perspectives within their industries, you know, to explain, you know, what they're doing that's regenerative and how they are trying to support and grow that through whatever it is that they're doing. And we're going to have other folks that are practicing a regenerative lifestyle share their, you know, experiences with you. And, you know, if you have an experience and a story to tell, we'd love to talk to you.
That's right.
So, you know, feel free to reach out to us. And I believe we're going to have all the links in the show notes, too.
Yes.
So you'll be able to click on those and start the conversation with us. We want to hear from you.
Yes,
we do.
Yeah, we do. So anyway, thank you for, you know, taking the time to join us today. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Hey friends, we hope that this production has served you in some way today. If you would like to hear more shows like this, please help us grow our army of Mimas by visiting our website and making a donation today. We are a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, and you know, I ask that you please like and share this video, follow us on Facebook, become involved with us on Instagram and Twitter, and all of our links can be found in the show notes. Thank you.